Welcome to the Infrastructure Show. I'm your host, Professor Joseph Schoffer of Northwestern University. The Infrastructure Show is designed to present to listeners the reality of America's infrastructure, its condition, why it is the way it is, and what can be done about it. Today's conversation is one of three we're having about the implications of the expanded Panama Canal for U.S. ports, harbors, and landside transportation infrastructure. The new locks and deeper channels, scheduled to open in the winter of 2016, will accommodate container ships nearly three times the size of the largest container ships now passing through the canal. Our guests today are Roger Bonnert, who's Deputy Associate Administrator in the Office of Intermodal Systems Development, and Yvette Fields, who's Director of the Office of Deepwater Ports, both with the U.S. Maritime Administration. Welcome. Glad to be talking to you.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having us.
I'd like to start out by finding out something about the Maritime Administration's study on the implications of the expansion of the Panama Canal for U.S. ports and harbors. I understand that phase one has been completed, and I wonder if one of you could kind of summarize the principal findings of that report.
Certainly. Let me just give you a little bit of background on the study. In early 2011, the U.S. Department of Transportation Maritime Administration commenced a comprehensive analysis of the national economic and freight infrastructure impacts that are expected to result from the Panama Canal expansion. The study is being conducted in four phases. As you noted, our phase one report was recently released to the public, and actually in November 2013. That report summarizes the developments in trade and national global economic impacts to the trade market. It also identifies the capabilities of U.S. ports to accommodate post-Panamax vessels. And it sets the stage for the remaining segments of the study that are underway currently. I will note that the Phase 1 report is currently available on the Maritime Administration's website. And so for all who are interested, please log on to MARAD's website to download that document. The Phase 2 through 4 report, which is the second and final report to be produced, as I mentioned, is currently under development. We expect that that report will be released later this year. That report will present a more detailed assessment of the likely impacts and capacity needs of U.S. ports and inland infrastructure. It will also provide an evaluation of potential investment opportunities for port development and expansion. And it will present recommendations to aid USDOT and other policymakers in making transportation decisions to address ports and infrastructure needs in anticipation of the Panama Canal expansion project when complete.
So can you give us an idea of what the initial findings were in Phase 1 report?
Well, the initial findings looked at what the current market is right now. It looked at what some of the ports have done in the past in terms of implementing expansion of their infrastructure to accommodate vessels that are calling on the ports. It also looked at demand for local and regional markets and some shifting of services from West Coast ports. And so it gives some overview of that. The Phase 1 report is really an overview document. Our Phase 2 through 4 report is more detailed and will provide really the meat of our study analysis.
I wonder, from your perspective, given your work on this study and your experience and responsibilities, if you could give us a sense of whether or not the ports, particularly in the Gulf Coast, are ready for the expanded canal, which I understand is going to open in the winter of next year, 2016.
Well, with respect to which ports are ready, I think we should really first look at the ports that what ports have done more recently and what they are doing in anticipation of the expansion. It's important to highlight that East Coast and Gulf Coast ports have anticipated challenges of receiving post-pandemic ships since the expansion was announced in 2006. In fact, many ports and transportation providers have already started undertaking some significant improvements to their infrastructure. Port terminals have been expanded and are undergoing expansion. Channels are being dredged, berths are being extended, and roads and rail yards are being built, as well as larger cranes are being ordered and put into place. It's also important to note that many improvement projects have been initiated in partnership with USDOT, and Roger will talk a little bit about some of our Tiger projects. And also partnerships have been established with state and local governments. The railroads have also partnered with the federal government to enhance capacity of rail corridors to accommodate double-stack container trains from ports to inland distribution centers. So I think it's really important to recognize that that has been a great effort among our ports and transportation providers. And so, more specifically with respect to Gulf ports, the Port of Houston, as you know, currently handles the largest volume of Asian import container traffic. And it's expected that that activity will continue as port improvements get underway. The Port of Houston is already receiving some intermediate-sized post-Panamax vessels. And as they continue their expansion efforts, we anticipate that they will become ready to receive even larger vessels that will transit the canal. So we know that Houston is already, just by looking at the volume, but we can't ignore some of the efforts that New Orleans is making, the Port of New Orleans and the Port of Mobile, to deepen and widen their channels.
As Yvette pointed out, there's already a lot being done in the industry to accommodate some of this change.
Could you give us a better sense of which ports have, let's say, the 50-foot and better channel depth to accommodate these larger ships?
There's really probably three general areas that that ports need to prepare for the larger vessels. One, as you just indicated, is the depth and the width of the channels. The second is the terminals themselves on the port property, especially with container ships. They need taller cranes with a larger reach because the ships are wider. And then lastly, you need the intermodal connectors, the rail lines especially, to get the freight in and out of the port on the land side. In terms of channel depth, really the needs are to be close to 50 feet depth for the newer ships. 55 would be ideal. Currently, the Gulf Coast ports are somewhat under that. Houston's about 45, Mobile's about 45, and others are somewhat less. There are some ports on the East Coast that are or are nearing 50 feet in depth, so they've come a little bit further along in terms of the channel deepening. We have invested in the Department of Transportation in intermodal projects in Houston. We provided the Port of Houston a Tiger grant for $10 million to help them with their Bayport Marine Terminal, and that includes a project to accommodate bigger ships at the dock as well as larger cranes for those larger ships. In Mobile, Alabama, we have provided a grant to help them with an intermodal facility where freight can move from the ship to rail cars. And in New Orleans, we've also invested in a terminal to help them accommodate more container throughput. And of course, the ports themselves are investing as well.
So how are they financed? You're talking about Tiger grants and other federal grants, let's say particularly for the railroads. Do the railroads supply the rest of the funding, or is it regional government or the port itself?
It's often a combination. It can be port revenues. The ports in some cases issue bonds, and in other cases, they're typically a political subdivision of either a city or a state, and they often get matching funds there. In each of the cases with these grants, the smaller of the portions is actually funded by the Department of Transportation.
So who decides what projects to move ahead?
In terms of the Tiger grants, it's a competitive process. So there's a nationwide solicitation for applications for the grants. with specific criteria, and then those are reviewed. There's often far more requests for dollars than dollars that are available, and the Secretary of Transportation then selects those projects that he deems the most beneficial.
And my understanding is that Tiger grants are a little bit different than some of the other grant programs in that there are some specific expectations about predictions and assessment of benefits and costs. Is that a fair way to describe that program?
That's correct. Part of the application process includes a benefit cost analysis so that the the financial predictions and the benefit, not only financial, but also the public benefits, equal or exceed the investment.
And is there an intention or an expectation that there'll be follow-up once the projects have been completed and the wider canal is available to see if those benefits actually occur?
That's correct. Once the construction phase of the project is completed, there is a three-year period following that where we collect various performance data, volumes, things of that sort, on each of the projects to determine, if they actually panned out the way the forecasts predicted. And of course, it's a rapidly changing environment. So we had a recession a few years back. A lot of these performance measures will actually have externalities, but we do want to be able to look back and determine whether or not we've achieved the benefits that we had intended initially.
So this will be an interesting experiment, if you will, for us to watch, and we look forward to seeing those reports. When will the rest of this impact study be completed, that is phases 2 through 4?
We are working to finalize our document now. We are channeling it through our concurrence process within our department, and then it will have to be reviewed by some other federal agencies. And we hope that by the end of the year, we will have the report completed and available for public viewing.
Excellent. So we can expect to see that on your website.
That is correct.
Well, this has been very interesting. You've given us a lot to look forward to. Roger Bonnert, Yvette Fields, I'm really glad to have the opportunity to speak with you both today.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much.